mainly concerned with the economic program, though. Try not to smile too much. There are a couple of items that should be discussed before we get into the presentations of Dave Stockman and Don Regan. I know that we had the grain embargo set up for being taken up again at this meeting, but I would like to continue and hold that in abeyance until some of the senators return next week and congressmen who are involved with that, because I'd like to have their input first before we get on with that. And so with that settled in, I'd like to call on Penn James for a report on our progress in the personnel area.
Look at what we have done. I'm confident we will. But we will
much.
If I might, Pam, do you have the as far as the pace of appointments is concerned, do you have the numbers from other prior administrations?
Yes, I do.
Prior administration, because I think the cabinet would be interested in those numbers, too.
Yes, I do. We went back and did a study of Eisenhower, Kennedy, Nixon, Carter, and your administration, Mr. President. Between the inaugural and February 7th, the number of appointees that have been sent to the Hill for confirmation. This number is in President Eisenhower at 34 at this point in time. President Kennedy had 37. Richard Nixon had 47. Jimmy Carter had 18. And he had 42.
On a better way to coordinate the efforts of the inspector generals to find and reduce waste and fraud and abuse. You're going to get tired of hearing me say this, but before I turn to Dave, or no, to Ed Harper's going to talk about this, I think. Before I say this, I want to point something else out again where all our responsibilities lie. It's one thing to have inspector generals inspecting for waste and fraud. On the other hand, if they come into a department and find everyone very busy at work and shuffling papers and so forth, they are not set up to investigate and see whether that function that is being industriously performed is outright duplication or waste and unnecessary. And this, again, is going to be the task of all of us in management, is to say, is this necessary? They're just looking for evidence as a feet of the desk and other things of that kind. So we've got to keep in mind they can't do the whole job for us. That other part of the job, I think it probably will turn up far more potential for savings than outright fraud. So now, is it our first?
Outstanding features of these charters put together. assign something to one department, chances are that might be present in other departments. That would be a, seems to be a valuable exchange of information as well.
We have to work closely with the Justice Department and with the FBI and both recasting the charter as well as the debriefing.
As you know, Treasury does not have a statutory inspector general. We have one. I assume that our inspector general can sit in with this group and listen.
Stock would have been working night and day to bring together the input on this program. And before I get into that, I shall pause because I think there's going to be a break, a station break. Stop for an interview, for an overview of what's been going on here.
say that I am not one to shrink from a tough task. But I must also say, and I think every cabinet member here will agree with me, that the goals that you gave us are extraordinarily difficult to reconcile, but I'm pleased to report today that we're almost there. The four objectives that you gave us as we attempted to formulate this economic plan were: one, to provide for a substantial and permanent tax reduction on individuals and businesses in order to restore incentives to growth, jobs, and prosperity in our economy. Second, to provide the additional resources that we're going to need to rebuild our national defenses and ensure our international security. Third, to achieve a balanced budget at the earliest possible date, but no later than the 1983-84 period. And fourth, to protect all essential government programs and all benefits for the truly needy. Now, those four objectives are difficult to reconcile. On the paper before us today, I think I can show you very quickly, if you would look at the column from fiscal year 1982, the kind of progress that we've made. On line one, we have a figure of $730 billion. That's what we inherit from the Carter administration in terms of spending during fiscal year 82. We made no changes in government policy. On line two, you have the figure for the additional defense outlays that we will need, or that will occur in 1982 as part of our long-term build-up or rebuilding of our defense posture. On line three, then, we have an indication, $735 million, of the amount of spending that would occur if we had not made this enormous effort that's gone on with each cabinet program and agency to find large budget savings for fiscal year 1982. Line four indicates the revenues that we will have available in fiscal year 82 to finance the government after our tax program, the first stage of that tax program, goes into effect along the lines that we discussed. Line five indicates the type of deficit that we would have if we did not implement the kind of deep, tough, and disciplined expenditure control budget reduction program that you have ordered us to develop. Line six indicates, in my view, the maximum tolerable deficit that we can present to the Congress for fiscal year 82 if we're to achieve your goal of reaching balance, not having to add to the national debt in future years. Therefore, line seven is the critical line. It's the operative line. It indicates the target, the goal that we've established for budget savings, for waste reduction, for program reorganization, for cutbacks to low priority programs, will be necessary to bring spending down and reach that maximum tolerable deficit for 82 and the balanced budget shortly thereafter. Now, in the lines below that, we see the progress report that our budget working group and each of the cabinet members that has worked with that budget working group has made during the last 2.5 weeks under your instructions. In the first case, we have already identified $38.2 billion worth of savings in programs, in overhead, in requiring certain users of government services to pay the cost of those services rather than the general tax of taxpayer, and certain tax expenditure items that we've agreed would be desirable to put into this plan. So what I'm saying is, to date, we have found and identified and gotten consensus in the budget working group and with the cabinet members for 72% of the savings that we would have to achieve in order to meet that $53 billion reduction target. In the next line, we have something called pending savings. These are additional proposals that have been discussed. I think we will reach consensus on them. We're going to have a budget working group meeting this afternoon that will provide us an additional $3.6 billion worth of savings for fiscal year 82. Then beyond that, in line 10, we have an item called additional savings that we expect from going through the remainder of the budget that we inherit from President Carter. That part has to do with the small programs, the small accounts, the overhead, the personnel, travel, and things like that that we have not yet dealt with in the budget working group, because there we have concentrated on the big programs and the big ticket dollar expenditures. We believe that we can get an additional $8 billion worth of savings as part of that remainder of the budget review that will be done in the next 3 or 4 weeks. Now, what is lying low. That's where I'm pleased to report the progress this morning. We believe that we have identified, agreed to, or have nearly in hand $49.8 billion, or almost $50 billion worth of savings in the fiscal year 82 budget. And that means as we move down the wire here towards the presentation of your plan, we only have about $3.4 billion more defined in terms of achieving the fiscal position and the deficit reduction that we've targeted for 82. What that means, to recap and summarize, is that we're 93% of the way to the goal that you've established for us. Now, Mr. President, I would like to say that we have been able to achieve that by making some very tough choices. And I want to tell you that every cabinet member who sat down as we looked at their budgets and their programs, whether it was the CETA program in the Department of Labor, whether it was the synthetic fuels program in the Department of Energy, whether it was the Export-Import Bank, or the whole array of other programs that we have talked about, every cabinet department head knew it would be tough to take these reductions. They would be difficult to sell on the Hill. Affected constituencies would get highly aroused and mobilized, but everyone has agreed to go along with these reductions. As a result of that, we're in a position today to tell you that because we see achieved the savings in these areas that we have discussed with the cabinet members, that we have been able to avoid proposing any cuts in a number of important programs that support essential federal efforts for the truly needy in our society. And that if we can stick with the cuts that we've agreed to thus far, we can avoid cutting some other programs that I would like to itemize very quickly, and that I believe we should protect and fully fund in order to live with your injunction that we not undermine programs for the needy and with your campaign pledge. First of all, we are proposing no reductions in the cost of living adjustment for the 32 million Americans who receive retirement benefits or disability benefits under Social Security. That is a very expensive program, $150 billion a year. The cost of living adjustment this year alone will be well over $15 billion. But we're proposing not to change that, not to reduce that, because we believe that the elderly population ought to be fully protected against the inflation that this government has created and that you identified in your speech last week. Secondly, we have proposed to fully fund the breakfast and lunch program for low-income and lower-middle-income children in our schools today who get free lunches and breakfasts. That costs this government $2.1 billion a year. It's an expensive item. But it does provide nutrition support to 9.5 million youngsters in our society who otherwise would not have that kind of nutritional level and would not fare as well in school as a consequence. A third program that we have recommended no reductions in is Medicare. Medicare is very expensive. It is costing us $45 billion this year, and it's increasing at a rate of $5 or $6 billion every year due to the increase in medical costs. But there are 29 million senior Americans, retired Americans, who are protected by that program, and we have insisted in this budget process that we find savings in low-priority programs and that we ensure that the elderly, and especially the poor elderly, have the full protection of Medicare today. Even with the money that we're spending under Medicare, the average retired person still has to pay 50% of his medical costs out of pocket, and we don't believe it would be prudent to make cutbacks in that program. Another important program that we've fully protected, that we've recommended no reductions in, is Head Start. This is a program designed to take youngsters of the preschool age from low-income families from inner cities, from ghetto areas, and put them in a program, a preschool program, in order to compensate for some of those things that they've missed in their home environment that would allow them to do better, achieve more in school when they enter. This program costs us $1 billion a year, but there are 375,000 young children in America who benefit from it. The studies show that it does improve their performance in school once they get into regular school. And we have insisted in this process that that program not be cut. A fifth program that we have avoided.
I think that program is going to save us money in the long haul. Because starting that early, we're going to make taxpayers out of potential tax eaters.
So that's precisely
that
right.
I think it's
nuts on is the Supplemental Security Income Program. That costs the federal government $8 billion a year, but it provides a decent level of income and a decent standard of living for 4.1 million blind, poor, elderly, and disabled. And we have recommended that this program be fully funded and that those 4.1 million people who suffer from disabilities not of their own making are fully supported by our government and by our commitment to a decent level of standard of living for every American. Finally, a seventh program to give you a further indication that we've recommended no change in is the Summer Youth Employment Program. Frankly, Mr. President, there's been a great deal of criticism of that program because it hasn't been managed well. When Secretary Donovan and I have talked about it, we think it can be managed better, but we also believe that it's important to fund that program because it provides 650,000 jobs this coming summer for ghetto youth, for low-income youth, for youth in inner cities who simply would have no other alternative if this program were not funded at its current level. So what I'd like to suggest in conclusion, Mr. President, is that we're 93% of the way to the goal. We've avoided cutting these important programs that are consistent with your commitment to protect the needy, Social Security, and Head Start, and Medicare, and SSI. And what I guess I have to say to you this morning is that already, because some of these reductions, proposed reductions, have leaked to the press, have circulated on Capitol Hill and among the interest groups, there is great pressure being put on me, on the White House staff, and on members of the Cabinet to retreat from some of these reductions, like for the export-import thing, or some of the reductions that we've imposed on the Department of Energy, or some of the reduction that we've proposed on funds that go to the mayors. But I want to tell you, if we retreat 1 cent on any of those proposals, then there is no way that I can meet your goals except to recommend some reductions in these programs that we have protected thus far: Head Start, Social Security, aid for the disabled, Medicare, and so forth. I don't want to have to do that. I don't think that you want to have to recommend that. But if we have any slippage at all from the commitments that we have gotten in the budget working group and from the various parts of the government, then we would have to turn to that area. So to sum it up, I think that we're making good progress. We're almost at the goal of balancing these four objectives that you've given us. And with a little more time, like a day or two, I think by the end of this week, we can present to you a final plan in which the numbers add up, in which the policies are carried out, and I think it'll be one that the American people will respond to well when you present it to the country next week.
Dave, thank you very much, and I might say a thank you to all of you. I think this is just wonderful. We're talking about the 82 budget, that giant budget that goes into effect next October. It's true, more cuts are needed, and I think here again, perhaps we can find some of this as we look for some of those unnecessary things, even in the existing programs that are, let's say, simply excess administrative overhead, things of that kind. Since there's only one of us here that winds up with an increase, but for very understandable reasons, Cap Weinberger, I'm going to call on Cap because he and Dave have been working. I said no department was exempt, and none has been.